Good evening. Welcome to the September 22nd City of Columbia Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. May we have a roll call, please,
yes,
Ms. Secretary?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. Ms. Lowe?
Here.
Mr. Harder?
Here.
Mr. McMahon?
Here.
Mr. Stanton?
Here.
Mrs. Rodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Here.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Here.
And I am here. We have 9 responding to roll call.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. We have a quorum. Approval. Any changes to the agenda, Mr. Zinner?
No, there are no changes to the agenda for this evening.
So thumbs up. Do we need to do thumbs up on the agenda? No? Yeah, I always forget sometimes. Approval minutes. Regular meeting September 8th. Everyone received those minute notes in advance. Were there any corrections or modifications needed to those September 8th minutes? I see none. Do we need a motion? Somebody like to make a motion on those notes?
I'll move to approve the minutes from the September 8th, 16 meeting.
Ms. Lowe, thank you.
Second.
Mr. Stanton, thank you for that second. A motion has been made and second for approval of the September 8th minutes. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strotman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
My vote is yes. We have 9 votes in the affirmative.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Those minutes have been approved. We have, moving on, we have a withdrawn item, case 16-86, a request by Crockett Engineering Agent on behalf of the Ridgemont Development LLC, the owner, seeking approval to restore approximately 12.34 acres from, I'm sorry, restore, rezone, approximately 12.34 acres from R1, which is single family dwellings, to PUD 2.9 plan unit development with a maximum of 2.9 duplexes per acre and units per acre, and approval of a development plan to be known as Ridgemont Park. The 12.34 acre subject site is located at the east edge of Ridgefield Road, lying south of Ridgemont Road. May we have a staff report, please?
As you have stated, Mr. Chairman, this item has been withdrawn by the applicant. It appears on the agenda as a for information purposes only. The item was tabled to this agenda, and therefore, as a formality, we are indicating that the item has been withdrawn. There is no public discussion nor report to be given.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. And also with that, Mr. Zinner, may I ask that means we need no vote, correct? Since the applicant withdrew it, it's really out of our control.
That is correct. No vote required.
So really just to let the public know about it, and we're moving on. Okay. Moving on to tabling requests. We're getting a little variety this evening. A tabling request, case 16-178, a request by Crockett Engineering Consultants on behalf of Tompkins Homes and Development, Inc. and Glenn Smith Trust and Lily Beatrice Smith to annex 90.8 acres into the City of Columbia and to permanently zone the property R1, which is our current one-family dwelling district. The subject site is located at the western terminus of Smith Drive, approximately 3,000 feet west of Scott Boulevard. A request has been received to table this item to the October 6th meeting. Staff, may we have a staff report, please?
Yes, the applicant has requested a table, and we support it at this point. We're still working through some items left on the plat and the additional review time the applicant has requested. So we're support the tabling request.
And this is their first request, correct?
Correct. I know the slide is incorrect. There is no PUD zoning being or requested at this point. It's all R1. It was a typo. Apologize.
Thank you for noting that typo. Commissioners, any further discussion needed on this tabling request? Anybody like to make a motion and such? Mr. Stanton?
As it relates to case 16-178, request to table this item to the October 6, 2016 meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton. We have a
second.
Mrs. Russell, thank you for that second. Is there any further discussion needed on that motion? We have had a motion made and second to approve this table request to our October 6th meeting. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. We have 9 in the affirmative.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. If you were here, if you're in the public and you were here for the case 16-178 that we just discussed tabling, we would please recommend that either you're welcome to speak at the end during the public comment section, or we would prefer that you would come back on the October 6th meeting to give us that information if possible. Moving on to subdivisions, case 16-145. A request by Crockett Engineering Consultants on behalf of Fred Overton Development, Inc., which is the owner, for approval of a 29-lot preliminary plat on R1, which is our current one-family dwelling district, zoned land to be known as Creek Ridge, plat number 2, with an associated variance to section 25-47 regarding street length. The 21.04-acre subject site is located west of the western terminus of Waltz Drive, a south of the southern terminus of Heath Court, and addressed as 5420 Heath Court. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I'm fighting a little bit of cold tonight, so I will try and keep it somewhat brief so I don't lose my voice. As you mentioned, it is a request for a preliminary plat, approximately 21 acres. At the terminus of Heath Court, which is currently not constructed, but this is kind of a continuation of a previous development that was platted to the north of this site, and we'll touch on that in 1 second. They are requesting the approval of the preliminary plat, but it is based on the need for approval for variance to 2547, which would be for a terminal street that exceeds 750 feet. This is kind of an aerial view of the site to give you a little bit broader look at the site we're talking about tonight. This is the terminus to the north of Forum, where it intersects Old Plank to the north. The existing plat to the north of this is this section here, kind of the clearing area. That's the plat 1. This is basically a continuation of that plat and would take access through this at construction. I believe a copy of that plat was included in your packet to kind of give you a little bit better context for where this site is located in relation to the existing final plat. And you see it does have several natural features with creeks through the site. Street to the southwest, and also at this point would be a private drive or private access way, although it is named and previously referred to as Waltz Drive. And we'll touch upon that actually a little bit here in a second as well. Overall, the site includes a majority of property that has not been previously platted, but it was included in a preliminary plat when this entire site was first done. The northern portion has been platted, like I said, as plat 1, and you can see this is kind of the existing lots to the north. It does include a couple lots from that first plat, plat 1, and actually some of that has been replatted at some point, so I do go back and forth between referring to plat 1 and plat 1A, so generally they were covering the same area, though. So 26A and 27B are generally replats of lots that are existing. Everything south, basically the majority of the site, is a new layout, which is different than the original preliminary plat. The original preliminary plat generally had this as one large lot. This plat here would add 24 additional buildable lots to the overall development. It does require the extension of Heath Court to the site. The right-of-way would be dedicated at the time of final platting with this to grant the access. It would also dedicate some additional right-of-way along the south. This property, if you noticed on the broader view, has some neighboring properties and neighboring connections that are not necessarily fully developed or fully fleshed out at this point. We did discuss this right-of-way dedication with the applicant in order to help facilitate future connections. At this point, Waltz Drive does not appear to be a public right-of-way, and Ridgewood Road is not currently built to the property line. So there are some challenges with connection from either of these roads in the future. However, we felt pretty strongly that some right-of-way for Waltz Drive was warranted in this case. In this situation, we have a half-width on this property. If the property to the south develops in the future, they'd be able to dedicate the additional right-of-way for a full roadway with hopes of making that connection to improve the connectivity in this portion of this development in the future. Excuse me. One slight issue with the layout currently as shown, as we identified in the staff report, is they are showing 101 lots, which exceeds the max number of lots that can be developed on one point of access. And if you had noticed, all the lots within this development do take their access to a through street at Old Plank Road. So it has one point of access. 77 lots are existing. They're adding 24, so it's 101. There was some revisions in the past where some of the lots previously had been identified as common lots, but when they were replatted, that was removed. So now they have to be considered buildable lots. So there was a little bit of confusion on that. But at this time, the applicant, I believe, is aware that they are exceeding the 100-lot max. And anything going forward would either need to also have a variance request for this layout here as shown, or alternatively, they may revise one of the lots. And we identified lot 24 due to some circumstances with the park district as one that they could possibly re-identify as a common lot, therefore reducing the buildable lots to the 100 lot max. So not a big issue, but something just to keep aware of, that it would need to be revised if it moves forward for that issue. So touching on the variance, again, Heath Court right now, as it exists to the north, is approximately, I believe it was about 450 feet long. The extension of this adds additional length to that street, thereby request would enable a street that would be about 1,500 feet in length. The current max for a street segment such as this is 750. So staff evaluated the request for the variance. At this point, we do not support the variance for the cul-de-sac, the length of the cul-de-sac in excess of 750 feet. And we'll go through some of those reasons here. Generally, excuse me, generally, again, just to point out, the length that's being requested does greatly exceed the maximum amount of a legal or a allowable cul-de-sac at 750 feet at more than double the allowable length. One thing to point out is within the subdivision regulations, 2542, it does specify intent and kind of the reasonable application of cul-de-sacs within a subdivision design. And generally, the recommendations are that cul-de-sacs should be short in length, and they should be used in general to avoid sensitive areas such as creeks and steep slopes and other areas that should be preserved. Evaluating the site here, it would appear that the extension would actually necessitate the development of this site to the south, and the extension of the roadway would actually be necessitating the development of sensitive areas. And so as opposed to avoiding them, the variance would then be actually used to be able to develop in those areas. In the past, we have considered variances to subdivision cul-de-sac length, as I'm sure the commission's aware of. We do draw some contrast between our support for some of those other cul-de-sacs. In general, when we have considered the other cul-de-sacs, we've looked at ones that didn't greatly exceed the 750 feet. We've looked at ones that were longer, 900 or 1,000 feet. But we also looked at how they're being applied, and generally we look for cul-de-sacs that run along the top of a ridge that would be needed to access the end of a ridge, and the challenge would then be providing connectivity at the end of a ridge, which would then require basically the construction and the grading of property down along a steep slope to be able to provide a connectivity through. So we've looked at that as far as a proper application of cul-de-sacs, and then sometimes when you have a long ridge without the ability to provide some of those access points that would necessitate a longer than 750-foot cul-de-sac, we consider those reasonable applications. This does not appear to be in line with those types of situations. It's kind of contrasting those, in fact. So another thing to point out, and it's not something that is prohibited, but the street slopes that are necessary to be able to access this site with the variance are 10%, and that is the max slope grade for streets that the city allows. Now, while that wouldn't be used to deny specifically any type of street, I think it's important context in this regard. If the 10% slope is necessary to be able to develop this site on the south side and a variance is required to do that, I think that speaks to maybe the appropriateness of that variance. Generally, it's 10% steep slopes. There is concern with traffic being able to access the steep slopes, particularly heavy trucks or heavy service vehicles. We have had complaints with steep slopes in the community when the weather is when we have inclement weather, with driving up and down them when there's snow or ice. These become rather treacherous. So there's concerns with utilizing these in situations. I think, again, viewing it through the lens of needing a variance in order to accomplish this also speaks, I think, to the reasonableness of the variance request. In general, with the denial of the variance, there is generally not a way to access this property at this point. Staff acknowledges that, and that's part of the issue, and we understand that the concerns with the applicant. However, I think from our standpoint, not necessarily every site is developable in a manner which requires a variance. So this is something that would be able to be accessed in the future with development to the south that could provide connectivity in the future. And, in fact, it's probably the best case is to have a connection from the south feeding into the area here and not having that connection between these two portions to avoid the steep sloped area and the creek area. So. Now, whether or not that's what happens, that's kind of left up to the market. But at this point, it may be, I think staff's general view is this is probably just a little bit too soon as far as development goes. One thing I touched on a minute ago was Lot 24. We are aware that the property owner is in discussions with the park department to possibly secure some of the property on this site and some other sites adjacent to it. We're fairly confident that if this is denied, that there is a manner in which that transaction can still move forward with some other type of subdivision of the plat. So just to be upfront about that situation. And however, that's not necessarily in consideration with this plat. We're reviewing it based on what's in front of us today. So just to summarize the recommendation then, we are recommending denial of the variance at this point. Which also necessitate the denial of the preliminary plat as well. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff, commissioners? I see none. As is in our past, we will honor anyone that's here, even though this isn't a part of the public hearing portion of our meeting. If there's anyone in our audience that would like to speak on this matter that would give us more information, we would welcome that. Just please give us your name and address, and please step forward.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 2608 North Stadium. I'm glad, I appreciate the opportunity to have one of my projects here tonight anyway. With me tonight is Fred Overton, who is the applicant and the developer of the property in question. And again, I'd like to just do a brief overview of some of the items that I think several of the items Clint has already talked about, but I'd like to reiterate some of them. Again, current zoning is R1, is 22.6 acres in size. And we're proposing 24 additional single-family lots. Within that, one of those lots, we are working with the Parks and Recreation Department to acquire that as a city park, so that would push down to 23. And there is some confusion with regards to some replats that had previously taken place not related to this development, or to, excuse me, to this plat, whether or not they're buildable lots or not buildable lots. I'm here to reiterate and to commit that we're not going to have any more than 100 lots within the development. All that matter, we can get cleaned up, we can work that out however it needs to be worked out. We can talk about that a little bit more with regards to the park department. Now, when this project started going through the approval process, again, one of the departments that gets a copy of the preliminary plat is the Parks and Recreation Department. They saw the plat, they liked the plat, they contacted us about acquiring about 20, 21 acres of property within this development for a city park. We did not reach out to them. We did not go to them and say, hey, this is a great place for a park. Would you come please buy it from us? They approached us and said, hey, we would like to talk to you about that. So I think that's kind of important. We don't want to have the impression that we're trying to use the parks as sugarcoating for this development. It's something that they approached us on. Again, I believe Mr. Smith had a copy of the preliminary plat that you have looked at. I would like to, one thing I'd like to state is that Waltz Drive, that's along the east side of the development, it is a public street. I think Mr. Smith called it a private drive, but it is a public street. It is owned and maintained, snowplowed, maintenance, and everything else by the county. So that is a county street. However, we don't have access to Waltz Drive. We worked really hard with the county trying to acquire that access, trying to see if we could have that access. We simply can't get that access. It actually falls short of our property line. We had an arrangement with the property owner to the south to acquire an easement to come around to have connectivity so we could tie into it. We would do something like emergency access or something along those lines. She initially agreed, and then she decided not to pursue that option with us. So we don't have direct access to that roadway. And again, there's also another street, Ridgewood to the south, that also comes up that's adjacent to this property. So there's roads to the south that aren't built that are fairly close to the development. And again, I think we're going to focus around mainly the variance request that's before you tonight. Obviously, a request for cul-de-sac length. The purpose of that is that we don't have access to the adjacent roads. If we did, we would not be seeking this variance. And what I really want to reiterate tonight, really want to show tonight and try to pass on, is that this is not the typical variance that you typically see for a cul-de-sac. It's not a permanent situation. We're setting it up for future connectivity. We're setting it up for future extension. The property to the south will have access to this street. So we're not going to install a cul-de-sac that's 1,500 feet in length, that's going to have lots all the way around it and never be able to be extended. That's not the case. It's not permanent. It's a temporary situation until property to the south develops adjacent to our site. It does not create an unsafe situation. When this was submitted to the fire department, the assistant fire chief, the fire marshal called me and wanted to discuss this project a little bit. He had concerns over the 10% grade. Where are they located? Are they at the cul-de-sac? I said, no, they're not at the cul-de-sac. They're in the middle of the length itself. Oh, well, 10% is our maximum grade. Yeah, absolutely. Will you have adequate vertical curves located along that stretch of road? Absolutely. That's a requirement by Public Works. He said, okay, if it's not at the cul-de-sac, we're fine with it. As long as you meet all subdivision regulations, we don't have an unsafe situation. Fire and safety won't have a problem with it, and we're fine. So he personally told me that, so I don't see that creates a health and safety issue with regard to emergency response. Secondly, we have two locations to turn around at the end of the plat. If you notice the plat, we have a temporary turnaround at the very end that stubs to the property to the south, and we also have an eyebrow located on the property as well. And I think that's somewhat important as well. It allows for multiple locations to turn around. Again, here's the overview. And again, the pointer never works on the screen. I apologize for that. But you can see the development that's developed to the south. They have a street that stubs up close to our development that's not built. You have Waltz Lane, that's our Waltz Drive, that's on the east side that almost stubs into our property. And then you have a relatively large piece of property to the south that's undeveloped that will develop in the near future. We have been asked here recently to develop within the urban service area. You know, let's not extend and keep on going out. This is an infill development if you look at it being inside the urban service area. So we've been asked to look at locations and look at properties that are, think outside the box a little bit and try to locate, develop properties that already have the infrastructure in place. I want to show you something that has similar developments. When I say similar, it's not exact. They're all just a little bit different. But here's a development in the north part of Columbia. It's called Lakeshire Estates. It has a length, it could be said it has a long, lengthy cul-de-sac. It's about 1,800 feet in length, and it serves 54 lots. Again, the stub on the far south is stubbed to the property for future extension. So that's not going to be a permanent situation at that location. Here's another one that's not too far from our subject site. This was in the Highlands. It's about 1,700 feet in length. It serves about 9 lots. And again, you can see the two developments there, that there's a piece of property that's undeveloped between the two. They don't have a road between them. So it's going to be connected at some point in the future, but it wasn't cul-de-sac. It wasn't held back. It was allowed to be extended for that purpose. Here's another one out in Bluff Creek. Again, this is, doesn't cross the creek. It falls short. It has grades of 10% grade. This one's hard to see. This was a Bellwood. Again, very similar situation, 2,600 foot in length, but there's a stub to the south for future development. So the length of cul-de-sacs will be greatly minimized once that property to the south develops. Again, property to the south is going to be very difficult to develop, but again, I think planning staff at the time thought that it was achievable and it could be done. So a similar type situation. And then I think this is the last one. This is East Point. Now, I'm not promoting this one as what we're doing. This is what we're not doing. This is a cul-de-sac length and about 1,600 feet in length, and it's a permanent cul-de-sac bulb. It goes down there and stops. It will never be extended. This is not what we want. We want the other situations that I presented before you. Of course, there's other ones. Linwood Drive and Woodrail, Cimarron and Drive and Woodrail, Stonehaven Drive in the Highlands. Stonehaven Drive is a good example because not only was it a lengthy cul-de-sac, but it was also one that got extended in the future. So now then it was built with a lengthy cul-de-sac, but it was extended finally to have a point of connection. That'll bring us to the park acquisition. This is about the 21 and a half acres of land that the Parks Department is asking for. I believe that there's some verbal agreements in place right now. They've approached us about buying that. They're buying it at a steeply discounted rate. With our current situation, we agreed to work with them on that. One item that they are really wanting, they really want connection to our future street that we are building through there. They want that connection adjacent to a public street. That's one thing that they've asked for. That's what we're trying to provide them with. Here's a little overview with an aerial. You can kind of see the park in the surrounding area. The reason why they came to us and asked for that is they've been looking for parkland in this area for quite some time. They think that this is a great location. It's a great piece of property. I think they're looking more of the park, of more of a nature preserve, nature setting, and that's what they want to do at this location. We think that adding that is a great amenity. I do argue a little bit with staff, not argue, I disagree with staff respectfully, with regards to Section 2547 and terminal streets. I don't believe this is a permanent terminal street. This is a temporary terminal street. We think that it will get extended in the future, and therefore it's not going to be a long-term situation with a permanent cul-de-sac bulb. We believe it's going to provide connectivity. Mr. Smith talked about Section 2542 that talks about avoiding cul-de-sacs. Well, the city regulations also talk about trying to provide connectivity. And this is a situation that we can provide a whole lot of connectivity to the south area down here by providing this this connection and having access to a park, having access, more direct access to Forum Boulevard and other portions of town. So does it go across a steeper slope? It does. The slope is a little steeper through there. Certainly it's something no steeper than we've ever done before. It's nowhere remotely close to that, actually. 10% grade street, we do them all over town. They are numerous. We design them on a regular basis. There's never any issues with them. I think there are some concerns. I think you'll hear concerns over steepness of grade. Certainly there are many streets in the city of Columbia that are far in excess of 10%. Those are the older streets, typically. They're not the newer ones that with the regulations. So again, we respectfully request your favorable consideration of this request. We believe that it's a temporary situation, and it's going to allow for long-term connectivity and a better environment for the whole area. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Commissioners, are there any questions for the speaker?
Do you know why some of those property owners changed their minds when they had agreed to allow you to have that easement on that? Was it the south side?
Yes, it was the south side. I mean, I think she didn't want to encumber an easement across her property was the only reason. She was the owner of the larger piece, the larger tract of land to the south that will develop at some point in the future, I believe. I just don't think she's an older lady. I don't think she wanted to be bothered. I don't think she quite understood the situation, didn't understand the easements. Folks like that sometimes just prefer not to be, not to be bothered with it.
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Burns.
Mr. Crockett, so my understanding is that in talking with that property owner, you recognized the better situation in having connectivity or having, but now that that's not available,
correct.
Here we are.
That is correct. We talked to that neighbor. She agreed. Some of the neighbors on Waltz Drive don't want a connection of any sort, of any type. We understand their concern. We were saying, okay, well, maybe we just do an emergency-only access. So that we don't put traffic on Wall Street. We're completely fine with that if we could have just a secondary access for emergency services. But given that the road doesn't go all the way, they were not agreeable to that situation, and we have no way to force it, and nor do we desire to.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to state also that was one thing that Parks and Rec really would like to try to work with is an access come from Walsh Drive. Most likely a pedestrian access that would have access to the park if they can get it. But they feel that connectivity through there is relatively important.
Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Crockett, you mentioned you were working with the county on getting access because
yes.
It looks like through lot 12, you're actually within a few feet.
No, it was actually we were working with the county to see if we actually had, if Walsh Drive actually was contiguous to our development.
Right. And it looks like you're not quite, but you're within a couple of feet at lot 12.
Let's go back here.
Looks like there's a lot, undeveloped lot between.
Yes, lot 12. You are correct. Lot 12 is the, originally what we had, instead of coming down and stubbing to the property to the south, we were sweeping it to the east and tying directly at the end of Walsh Drive. However, we don't have access, so we cannot do that. So what we've done at the city's request is to provide additional right-of-way so that should Walsh Drive ever be extended, should the property or when the property to the south develops, they can grant half the right-of-way, we grant half the right-of-way, and then Walsh Drive could be connected if that little section that we don't have access to, if that was ever granted, then this plat would allow that we would have access to Walsh Drive at that time. So it's not completely cutting Walsh Drive off forever. It's just until that extra little section at the end that's currently there that we don't have access to if it's ever obtained by the county or the city.
So there is no current right-of-way beyond the existing stub out?
That is correct.
And if you provided the right-of-way, this is a county road?
That is a county road. We can provide the right-of-way on our property. We cannot provide the right-of-way off of our property. The road is there by on prescriptive purposes, meaning that it's a county road. They own and maintain the road itself. There is no officially dedicated right-of-way. At some point, I'm sure there will be, but because the road itself stops and falls short of our property line, we don't have access to it.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the speaker? I see none, so thank you, Mr. Crockett.
Thank you.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify real quick what Mr. Crockett had said too, as far as the Walsh Drive, and that was our understanding with our conversations with the county is that there is a road there that is maintained, but there is not public right of way. So because the physical street, the pavement ends before it reaches the subject property, there is no manner in which, with public right-of-way in place, you could go on and actually build roadway. So there is no manner for us to actually make a physical connection between the two roads. So with that in mind, that was part of our evaluation is whether or not this should connect directly to Waltz. We saw a lot of value in making that connection to Waltz. I did specifically talk with several residents out there during our public information meeting, and I can verify what Mr. Crockett had said. They do not wish to have connection, but I did explain what the purpose of that would be and what the goals of the cities would be as far as making a connection through Walsh Drive. But at this point, we're under the impression that that could not happen at this point.
I'll just kind of follow up with the question that Mr. Smith is, then what is the city and the county's plan?
I don't think there is a plan right now. I think there's if the property owners ever seek to do anything additional with that property, or if the property to the south of this is generally a road that is on the south side of several county lots, which are on the north side. So if the property owner on the south side of where Waltz is possibly redevelop that site, then you could see requiring them to dedicate right of way to make a public road through there. So that's not necessarily the cleanest method either. So it's I don't know if there's a perfect way to obtain that.
So the Ridgewood Road is a city street?
County. That's county.
So both of the streets that we're talking about on the south side are both county controlled?
Currently located in the county, yes.
And they don't have a plan as to what and where those roads are going?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't think they have any type of capital improvement projects right now. It would all be development driven.
And if I am correct, Mr. Smith, what you are seeing on the graphic that is in front of you does not accurately or adequately depict from where the dark red line is that runs north-south and then runs west. There is actually a spite strip between what is shown as a right-of-way and the property line of the subject tract of land. So the road bed that is shown there actually is not at the property line.
For a small portion of it.
For a small portion of it.
Western, approximately this location here.
I mean, there has been some extensive conversation with the county's planning staff and planning director as it relates to Waltz, as it relates to the extension of Ridge Field or whichever road that is, Ridge whatever.
Ridgewood.
So at one point had travelable surface. You could drive from Ridgefield to Waltz. You can't anymore. The county has, yes, been maintaining, and because of that maintenance, has the prescriptive responsibilities for that. Expansion of the road right-of-way and its capacity to carry any additional development traffic on it was brought up at the very beginning of the project, which this has not been a recent submission. This has been quite some time in our queue. So there's been a lot of discussion as it relates to the inability for Waltz to serve adequately as an access that would meet any public street standards whatsoever. And that was causing great concern of the county's planning staff as it related to their responsibility for the maintenance of the road since it is still in their jurisdiction.
Thank you. Is there any additional speakers in the group or anybody that would like to speak on this matter? None? Do we have a question right there? Miss? You come back up and state your name and address and make it quick, Mr. Crockett.
Crockett Engineering, 2608. I'll make it very brief. Mr. Zinner is correct with regards to Waltz Drive and Ridgewood Road. But Mr. Smith, if you go back a couple of slides, really the point of stubbing the property to the south is not to really necessarily provide connectivity to two county streets. It's really to provide it to that section that's already in the county right below you, immediately south of us, that whole area right there. I believe, if I'm going off memory here, it's 60, 70 acres in size. Eventually, we believe that has city utilities that probably will develop, and it will develop inside the city of Columbia. So that's what the piece of property that we're really trying to stub to and provide connectivity to. Not necessarily two county roads that may or may never extend. It's a large piece of developable property that will probably have a connection at some point in the future. So I just wanted to clarify that.
And Mr. Crockett, since you've come forward.
Yes,
Route K, there's no access currently. There's no road coming off that Route K that would service that 60-some acres that you're referencing.
There is not right now. There are locations that could have access.
But none today.
There are none right now.
There's a lane to a private individual.
Right. So when that develops, they would have roads that would come back at that point.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Okay, commissioners, any discussion on this matter? Any thoughts, comments, motions? Yes.
There seems to be a lot of uncertainty with this project about what would happen moving forward, and that's what concerns me. And I understand the desire to develop this property, but it seems like there's too much reliance on what will happen in the future that we have no guarantee of what will happen.
But at the same time, I feel like they've done all they could to try to avoid that. And if the other property owners aren't willing, you know, they're letting this property owner not have full enjoyment of their property.
Well, then maybe the need for no variance would be raised, coming back with a different project.
Mrs. Slow.
You raised a few examples, Mr. Crockett, including East Point. But in counting the houses that are along East Point, I'm seeing there's only about 50. So there seem to be some discrepancies.
On my calculations on East Point, I have 25.
Okay.
And
so
Point,
even fewer.
Well, we have 23 in this. 23.
There's over 100.
This is for the entire development. East Point's just that cul-de-sac portion. So if we wanted to look at similar lengths of cul-de-sac, like I say, Lakeshire has 54 being served by the
counting the whole length versus the 100 along the whole length.
Well, if we look at the entire development, other developments are well in excess of the numbers that were presented. They're not just that many. The 100 is for the entire development that's already, the vast majority of it. The other 74 or 70, 73, 74, 77 lots have already developed. And so, you know, if we look at the entire developments of these other ones, East Point had much more than just 25 lots. It was closer
50.
To 50.
Correct.
Right.
So half the size of what you're proposing.
Correct. And but it has no future connection where this one would. So that was kind of
I understand, but it's also half the size.
Right.
Yeah. So I appreciate and you're bringing up those examples, but there do appear to be differences. And I have to agree with Ms. Burns that I am uncomfortable that I agree you've explored opportunities for making a connection, probably because that connection is so vital. And the fact that we don't have a very positive outlook at this time does not put me in a position to be supportive of the variance.
Other commissioners? Anyone? I've got a question for Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, would the city be anywhere agreeable to grant a portion of the lots to be developed, but not the entire 23 lots until connectivity to the south was had? Or is that not even an option of consideration?
I think our main points of concern with granting the variance is really accessing down the slopes and then back through the creek. It seems to be kind of in contrast to how you should be using a cul-de-sac link. So at this point, no, I don't think we would consider kind of a phasing plan if it meant needing to access through that area. I think that's kind of the main point of contention.
But if they were able to get access to either one of those county-controlled roadways, you would still not be in agreement to it because you'd still have the same access?
No, if they were able to access to the south through Waltz or through some other manner, obviously wouldn't have the variance, so we wouldn't necessarily have a method to object to that. So it kind of solves the problem. Their point, it's not necessarily still a best practice as far as developing a street on steep slopes, but I think they wouldn't necessarily need to seek a variance to do that. They could move forward with that. So.
Thank you. Commissioners, Mr. Harder.
I live in the East Point subdivision, and we really don't ever have any problems with the length of the cul-de-sac. It kind of keeps us a little bit more close-knit. I also like that Parks and Rec noticed this site for a park as well, too. I know some areas of Columbia, they have a hard time tracking down a certain location, and so for them to have a spot for a park, I think, would be beneficial as well, too. It doesn't look like it's going to be permanent. It may be a while until they connect to it, but I don't think any problems. I tend to feel like I would probably support it.
Thank you, Mr. Harder.
I've got a question for staff. So if this isn't approved, are the chances of this becoming a park greatly reduced?
I can't speak to that. I would leave that to the parks department and the property owner. So we're not necessarily involved in the negotiation of that.
From a technical perspective, Mr. Toohey, however, the F1 lot that is shown here on this graphic and the additional acreage that was shown on Mr. Crockett's graphic that the Parks Department has asked for would have roadway frontage. Does it have accessible roadway frontage given the fact that that is Old Plank Road? Potentially not to serve their purposes, but it does not, a denial of this plat does not eliminate the ability of the Parks Department through a platting action to acquire the acreage that is shown in the redlined area and combine it with the F1 property that has adequate roadway frontage to meet our subdivision standards.
Yeah, I should point out this area here is actually a current lot. So this is part of that discussion, and that could be transferred now with no issue. It'd be the additional acreage that's within this subject site. But as I think we touched on, as Mr. Zinner touched on, I think there's manners in which to accomplish the sale of the property without having to approve the preliminary plat and the variance.
And to the points that I think that have been raised by the commissioners and the concern of the accessibility of the lots that would be created for building purposes, again, it is a timing matter as to how this property to the south does develop, which would then obviously address connectivity issues. Not all property is developable at the time that it is wanting to be developed, that it wants to develop. Sometimes it has to wait for the infrastructure to get to it in order to make it a more developable parcel. The mere fact that the Parks Department would like to be able to purchase a portion of it and they desire internal subdivision access, I would suggest it is not limited. They can have pedestrian access off the end of the existing cul-de-sac of Heath Court in the interim period of time and then have the ability to be able to have street access at a point when it is platted in the future. That is something that the Parks Department and the property owner would need to negotiate as to how that easement may be created if it's not part of the transferred property.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, somebody like to move forward with a motion? Can't all do it at once. It's hard for her to keep track of it that way. No? No?
I'm writing.
Is that a motion?
I'm writing.
Oh, Ms. Lowe, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Smith, can you bring up the other slide, actually, that just includes the other recommendation, the denial recommendation? Thank you. Case 16-145, I'd like to move for denial of the variance to section 2547 for Heath Court. Are we doing these as two separate votes, or?
If you deny the variance, then I don't think you could approve the preliminary plat at this time. So you could still take a vote on it, but you would vote on the variance first.
All right. Okay. And denial the preliminary plat for Creek Ridge plat number 2. Second.
Ms. Lowe made a motion for denial, and Mrs. Burns seconded it. Is there any discussion on this motion? I see none. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
I'm getting confused. Mr. Harder?
No.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strotman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
No.
My vote is yes. That is 7 votes in the affirmative, 2 votes negative.
Thank you, Mrs. Byrne. That motion has been approved for denial of case 16-145. moving on to... Case 16-158, a request by Brush and Associates on behalf of Donald Mattingly, which is the owner, for a two-lot subdivision to be known as Mattingly Subdivision, Plat 1. The 0.75-acre subject site is located at the northwest corner of the intersection of Renwood Drive and Ballinger Lane and is addressed as 4703 and 4705 Renwood Drive. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Mr. Chairman. I am filling in for Mr. Palmer on this case. This is a request for a two-lot replat of an existing lot of record there on the corner, northwest corner of Renwood Drive and Ballinger Lane. The existing improvements that are shown in this aerial actually consist of the dwelling unit that is on the east side, closest to Ballinger Lane, that is an existing duplex, and the improvements that I believe are on the west side of this property will be removed, or they have been, and replaced with a new duplex dwelling unit, which is what the purpose of this subdivision action is for. Plat is oriented so we could get more of it on the screen for you. Ballinger Lane is at the very bottom of this plat, and then Renwood Drive is on the left-hand side of the graphic. As I had indicated, the existing duplex is there in that southerly lot, which is lot number 1, and then the newly created lot is the one that is to the north on this graphic, lot number 2. Both of the lots that will be created do meet our minimum duplex lot size for the R2 zoning district, which is greater than 10,000 square feet. And the plat does propose to dedicate additional road right-of-way that is necessary to meet the half-width requirements for Ballinger Lane. Roughly an additional 18 feet is being dedicated. That dedication will create a nonconformity for lot number one's existing duplex by about 1.3 feet along its what would be the easterly property line of the site, or that that is going to be encumbered by Ballinger Lane's dedication of additional half width. In that instance, the legal nonconforming structure may remain, may be maintained. If it is destroyed greater than 75%, it would need to be rebuilt in compliance with our current setbacks, which means that 1.3-foot encroachment would be eliminated. The parcel can be redeveloped and be improved again if they were to remove the home entirely, provided that it meets our setback requirements at that time. In the short period of time or in the interim period, however, it will remain there, again, as a legal nonconformity. With this subdivision platting, they will be required to install sidewalks, and they must comply with our stormwater regulations. As a result, plans have been submitted for both those types of improvements. They are under review at this point and will need to be approved prior to the plat being able to be forwarded to City Council. The subdivision does create lots of comparable size to the property that is to the south of Renwood Drive, as well as generally what is to the west of this particular property in the existing single-family or duplex subdivision that exists around it. So it is not non-characteristic. The lots that are on Ballinger Lane are generally this particular size unsubdivided as they move up along Ballinger themselves. But within this being the entrance to an existing subdivision, this isn't something that we would actually oppose as an appropriate utilization of the property and its acreage. We are recommending approval of the plat, subject to the stormwater and sidewalk plans being approved. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, are there any questions for Mr. Zinner? Yes.
Access to the newly created lot, is that going to be off that existing driveway?
Until we were to see a development plan, Ms. Rushing, we are not sure. We would imagine it would be probably at a private driveway,
okay,
location further to what would be to the west of, on Renwood from the existing driveway location itself. It could be shared. That's not uncommon in a duplex scenario, but given the orientation of the existing duplex, it probably would be unlikely. But again, the site plan hasn't been submitted, so we are not sure.
And it just looked like there was a beginning of a drive off to the side, so I was curious.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's a shed or something. Any additional questions for Mr. Zinner? I see none. As in past practices, anyone in the audience that is here to speak on this matter, though it's not a public hearing, we would give you an opportunity if it would help us in our decision. I see none. Commissioners, any comments, any further discussion needed, any motions? It seems like it's a fairly splitting a lot into two, and it's fairly simple, cut and dry.
I'll do a motion.
Oh, Mrs. Russell, thank you for a motion. Mrs. Russell? Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
In regards to case 16-158, Mattingly Subdivision, Plat 1, I move to approve the final plat minor, subject to the stormwater and sidewalk plans being approved prior to forwarding to council.
Thank you, Mrs. Russell.
I'll second.
Ms. Lowe, thank you for that second. With that, we have a motion that has been made and a second has been put on it. And is there any further discussion needed, commissioners, on that motion? Pretty clear. Mrs. Secretary, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Stradman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
My vote is yes. There are 9 votes in the affirmative.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. That motion, that will be sent to, we will be forward to City Council for their review. Moving on to case 16-189, a request by Grimes Consulting, Inc. on behalf of Sigma New House Corporation, which is the owner, for approval of a one-lot final plat to be known as Sigma New Fraternity, with an associated variance to section 25-43 regarding right-of-way width. The 0.915-acre subject site is located on the northeast corner of College Avenue and Boucher Avenue. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request for a final plat property there at the northeast corner of College of Bichelle. They currently have two legal lots, and they're consolidated into one lot for purposes of development. They are requesting a variance to Section 2543, which specifies right-of-way width, and I'll discuss that further here in a second. Here's another aerial of the shot of the site above. I would point out the site is now cleared. This does not have any structures on it. As you can see on the lot on the bottom, it would be creating a one-lot plat. The applicant is dedicating right-of-way for Lee Street and also additional right-of-way for Bouchelle for an appropriate 25-foot half-width. Currently, right now, there's a 40-foot right-of-way, so that would be their portion to achieve a 50-foot right-of-way. So these are narrow residential streets. They're also granting corner truncations at the southeast corner and the southwest corner as appropriate. The one additional dedication that they have requested a variance to would be additional right-of-way along College. I touched on the consolidation. Basically, the requested vacation, or excuse me, the requested variance would be for the standard cross-section of a major arterial, which is what College is identified on. That requires 106-foot total right-of-way with a 53-foot half-width being the applicant's requirement from the center line on their side. Currently, there's a right-of-way of approximately 75 feet total. We did confer with MoDOT and also our city traffic engineers on this site. They did not identify any needed additional right-of-way for this site. All street improvements have been completed within the existing right-of-way. And this is fairly common with this type of development, given that there is a fairly developed nature of this corridor. So there's not very much available right-of-way to acquire, even if they did wish to acquire. So they were able to accommodate the existing roadway improvements with what they have now. So they feel no need to request the additional right-of-way. We also look to Appendix A, which is a manual used by the Public Works, and they do, again, kind of stress the redevelopment of sites that have are located in areas that have been previously developed and give them a little bit more weight as far as when they seek variances to some of these standards that might affect the nature of the surrounding neighborhood. So the likelihood that there be a 106-foot right-of-way development of a roadway through here is very unlikely. So deferring to MoDOT's recommendation and the traffic engineer's recommendation, we are also recommending granting of the variance for the right-of-way along College. I'd be happy to, and then with that, also the approval of the final plat. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there any questions for staff? I see none. As in past cases this evening, if there's anyone in the audience that is here for this matter, even though it's not a public hearing, we would welcome that information be brought forward for our help in making our decision. So if anybody's here, please come forward and give us your name and address. We'd appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Kent Nurnberg with Grimes Consulting, St. Louis, Missouri. I just want to come before you. Our clients are trying to redevelop this site. They had an older building that was there, and because of the requirements that the city for the new code, they now have to consolidate the lots to be able to develop and have their parking on the same site as their building. So we've tried to work with the city as much as we can. We've granted them all the right-of-way that they've asked for. We're desiring to be good neighbors with the city, and we just ask that you would kindly consider this variance request for the right-of-way along College Avenue. So thank you.
Any questions for this speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Rams. Any additional speakers would like to come forward? I see none. Commissioners, any comments, discussion on this case number 16-189? Seems fairly combining two lots into one and redeveloping it. Ms. Lowe?
It appears the applicant's working with the city, and the city's recommending approval of the variance request. So I plan to support it. There isn't any additional comments. I'll go ahead and make a motion.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. We would take that motion.
Case 16-189, Sigma Nu Fraternity, final plat variance. Mr. Zenner, is this two votes or one?
Two, please.
Two, please.
Two.
So we need to do the variance first.
So I'll move for approval of the variance to section 2543 for right-of-way width with condition that the TCEs be granted to the city or MoDOT upon request.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe, for that motion. Ms. Rushing, thank you for that second. We've had a motion made and second. Is there any questions or further dialogue needed on this motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
My vote is yes. That is 9 in the affirmative. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. That will be approval for the variance to section 25-43. Now we're moving on to the final plat. Recommendation for approval or denial of the final plat. Any commissioners? Mr. Stanton.
As relates to case 16-189, I move to approve the final plat for Sigma Nu Fraternity.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton, for that motion. Ms. Rushing, thank you for that second. Is there any other further discussion or questions on this motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
My vote is yes. That is 9 in the affirmative. Motion carries.
Thank you. The approval for Sigma Nu Fraternity final plat will be forwarded to City Council for their review and recommendation. Moving on to our two public hearings for the evening. Case 16-182, a request by D&M Leasing LLC, which is the owner, to rezone land from R3, is our current medium density multiple family dwelling district, to C1, which is our intermediate business district. The 0.3 acre subject site is located on the west side of College Avenue, approximately 250 feet south of Business Loop 70, and is addressed 1201 North College Avenue. May we have staff report, please? Oh, got a new one on there.
Yes.
Again.
Hello.
Hello.
He's not sick. He's not sick, so we'll be okay now.
That's good. We don't want anybody sick. Looks like we have Mr. McIntyre. Are you doing staff report, looks like, maybe?
I am.
Well, it's all yours.
I'm going to do it.
Go.
As my two-year-old says, going to do it. Okay. So we've got a 0.3-acre site here on the west side of College Avenue that since the early 1960s has had a commercial structure on it and has been occupied by numerous businesses at this point. The owner, who's in the process of selling it to an electronic repair shop user, which would fit under the proposed C1 rezoning designation, was surprised to learn that it isn't zoned commercial. it's actually zoned R3. We could find no record after digging as deep as the pit goes. There was no record of any prior rezoning request on this property, although everything to the east and west pretty much has been rezoned from R3 and certainly farther south of the site, with the exception of the adjacent property immediately south of the site that does still have an R3 zoning and residential use on it. So you can see from the zoning map here, there is C3 to the north, CP and R3 to the east, and then to the west, on the east side of Fay Street, there's a mixture of CP, O1, And then farther down the block where the community garden or Center for Community Agriculture, I think, is located, there's a mixture of O1 with C1 in the middle for their sales area. Farther down College Avenue, it is mostly O1 until it hits the railroad tracks, and then we see a lot of a block of M1 industrial. So quite a mixture of uses. I'll give you another view here from Google. You can see the Waltz service, Volkswagen. They actually had a CP rezoning pretty much east of the site to allow for parking of additional vehicles that they service and work on. There's some vacant property immediately across the street again on College Avenue. That's actually zoned R3. probably, I would imagine, there would maybe be a rezoning request in the future on that site, given that the rest of the, or certainly a number of these developments farther along to the south on College have been office, and that is mostly the trend along this section of College between the Business Loop and Smith Street, certainly. There's a panorama photograph of the site from across College Avenue looking west. You can see the structure itself that, again, has been there. Based on aerial images, I saw it as early as the early 1960s, maybe longer. The request here is clearly to try to eliminate the nonconformity, not by eliminating the use, but by bringing the zoning up to meet the use. Again, the proposed user would be an electronic repair shop operator, which does fall into one of those uses that's permitted in the C1 district, which is being requested. Staff in looking at those surrounding uses and zoning that I've gone over with you, believes that this would be an appropriate transition between the C3, more intensive general commercial use to the north along the Business Loop corridor, and those uses that are developing and zoning that seems to be developing to the south of the site, again, with the exception of that R3 immediately south. We are recommending approval of the rezoning request at this time, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. McIntyre. Are there any questions for staff? I've got a quick one. On the aerial that you show now, that red line, are those cars, those vehicles that are parked along that northern red line, are those with the business that we're discussing, or does that go with the, do those vehicles go with the car, the building to the north? Do you know?
I believe
my question is do they have is that some kind of a parking relationship with that owner that has been established? Is that not part of the parking? Do they have ample parking for the site as is?
I saw the applicant's surveyor put his hand up. I understand
we'll,
he does.
We'll learn more in a minute, I guess.
I'll let him answer the question if that's all right with you. But I'd
rather wait than have incorrect information, so we'll wait. Thank you, Mr. McIntyre, for that question. Answer.
We'll save you.
Any additional questions for staff? I see none. As this is a public hearing item, I will open the hearing to the public. If you'd like to please come forward, please give us your name and address.
Good evening. I'm Ron Luke. Luke Surveying, 914 North College. I'm just up the street from this place on the opposite side. Shilby's Tire and Wheel on the corner is the owner of this particular lot. They own both halves of the lot. It's in two different halves on their deed, but they own both halves, and as well as the entire Tire and Wheel place down at the corner. In answer to your question about the cars, they are cars from Shilby's that have been backed up there when they took the photo. Those have been serviced, and not much of the employees park around there, but the employees will park behind this building when they were using it. There is a asphalt lot a little bit behind the building that they'll park in, or gravel lot behind the building.
Behind as in the west?
Yeah, to the west of this.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is a metal frame structure that was built in 1960, 4 years prior to zoning being implied, being implemented for Columbia. The thing has got a concrete block structure around it. There's a metal door, garage door on the back, metal siding in back. I mean, it was built as a commercial building in 1960 and been used as such. They most recently ran camper truck tops out of that place and had them stored outside on the south side of the building and inside both. And they're just selling that off to create a opportunity for a business for somebody. And I've heard electronic appliance repair on it. I've also heard Robinson Cleaners is interested in it near diagonal to the northwest of there. The parking behind it, if they use it, they'll have to get an easement through Shelby's remaining property. Where you see those cars parked, about a 30-foot wide easement right through there. The staff's view and our view is that somehow fell through the cracks when rezoning or when zoning took place. And it came in as a R zone. Got any other questions? I can answer those, maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Luke. Are there any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Luke.
Thank you.
Are there any additional speakers for this item? I see none. We'll go ahead and close this public hearing. Commissioners, any discussion on this matter? Mr. Stanton, sorry.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move this forward. If there's any more discussion, I would like to recommend a
I see no one fighting you for discussion, so move forward, please.
As it relates to case 16-182, I move to approve the rezoning from R3 to C1.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton, for that motion. Ms. Rushing, thank you for that second. Any discussion on this motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Stradman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. That's 9 in the affirmative. The motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. That motion, that recommendation will be forward to City Council for their consideration. Moving on to last but for surely not least, case 16-184, a request by the City of Columbia which is the owner, to rezone two lots from CP, which is our planned business district, to R1, our current one-family dwelling district. The subject site includes property addressed 107 Lynn Street and 115 Lynn Street, both located on the north side of Lynn Street between Oak Street and Garth Avenue. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes. The reason for this request to downzone property from CP to R1 is so that they could build single-family homes on these lots. The request is being put forward by the city. Property was recently acquired, and we have Randy Cole here, with our housing program supervisor. To answer any questions you might have about the specifics of the affordable housing development that would ultimately be placed here. I'll give you just a little bit of history on the CP. You may remember from the last time we were here to talk about this block. With the PUD in the middle, I think that was rezoned just a year or two ago now, from another PUD, which was before that a CP that was actually part of these two winging or flanking CP lots that we're looking at tonight. So this whole section here of the block was zoned CP back in 1996, I believe, for Warren Children's Funeral Chapel. And that never developed. And here we are trying to redevelop the lot with single-family homes, which, despite the R2 zoning that sort of typifies the residential zoning, in this portion of the city. Most of the homes that have been and that have existed there since the early 1900s or that have been replaced recently are still single-family homes. So the R1 request, while it may seem a little bit out of character with the R2 two-family dwelling district zoning that you see in the immediate vicinity, is actually, in staff's opinion, more appropriate given that that is what we want to see here, that is what's intended to be here, and that is certainly the character that the neighborhood groups and stakeholders have bought into with recent meetings that Randy Cole has facilitated with them. So the request is to, again, just eliminate these remnant fragments of CP and bring it back down to R1. Here's another look at the site. You can see the Central Latino on the corner there. Oak Towers is across Garth Avenue, which is on the east side of the block. And here are some older single-family homes to the west, and some newer, I believe they're Job Point homes across the street on Lynn. The development for the PUD in the middle is that Lynn Street Cottages, four single-family homes, cottage-style development that you saw a year or two ago. Actually, I think it was just 1 year ago. And see, the block has a lot of green space on it. I'll let Randy actually maybe fill you in if you're interested in some of the other developments that are in the works for the north side of the block as well. There's really a lot of good things happening here that I think he'll be excited to tell you about. But our recommendation, of course, is for approval of the request to downzone to R1. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. McIntyre. Are there any questions of staff?
Yeah, can you say it? So across the street, there's actually even a few more newer houses, like on the corner and in that empty lot in between those two with the green roof and the black roof. And those, from your previous map, those were still all R2?
Yes.
So can you say again why you think R1 should go across the street as opposed to making those R2 also?
Because it's the proposed use is R1. We don't believe that there's any need to have R2 on lots that are substandard in size to where they could support single family, or pardon me, to where they could not actually support duplexes. So we're also trying to put forth a very transparent request, and so for the sake of concerned stakeholders within the neighborhood, we want to be absolutely clear that this is what the intended use will be.
Mr. Tui, additional questions? No. Ms. Lowe.
Mr. McIntyre, is there any intended use or proposed use for the remaining CP lot that's on the corner of Sexton and Garth?
That is a defunct CP plan. It's, I believe, been acquired by... It's not been acquired. Okay. No plans for that right now. Just to the west of it, though, there are some plans for, I think, a community garden or some sort of park space, and that was one of the items I alluded to that I think Randy could fill you in on a little bit more with some good information.
Not that yours wasn't good information, but we'll wait for Randy. Any additional questions for Mr. McIntyre? I see none. As this is a public hearing, so we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to come forward and give us any information, please give us your name and address, and we'd appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm Randy Cole. I'm the city's housing program supervisor. Our office is over at 500 Walnut and Suite 108. Thanks for letting me share a little bit about what's going on. If I could, I'd like to talk about all the great things we have going on over here. I'm really excited about where we've come so far and where we're headed. On the south side of Lynn, Steve mentioned, the 106 and 110 Lynn, they were vacant, dilapidated homes. Those since have been removed and redeveloped with new affordable housing. We did that with the use of job point labor. So I'd encourage you to drive down that street. It looks a lot different. Not only did we get new houses, but because of our development, Water and Light has been able to underground all those utilities as well as put in some new street lights. We also had sewers relined along that street. So we have a lot of good infrastructure improvements in place as well as affordable housing. On the corner there at Central Latino, we also just had council approve an agreement with CDBG funds to improve the exterior of that building. So I think that's really going to help selling those houses and really help the way the corner looks there. They're also going to build a landscaping wall in the rear of that building. So it'll really help that facility keep looking well-maintained. The properties to the north on Sexton, we held a series of meetings from October 2015 through March 2016. We did four of them with the neighborhood, had a lot of attendance. If you look at unduplicated counts, we saw about close to 40 people. Through the series of meetings, the main concern we heard from the neighborhood was stormwater. There's a lot of issue with flooding at the intersection of Garth and Sexton. So we went through a whole planning process with them and also partnered with MU and some of their architectural study students to do some mock site diagrams, and then also got some feedback from the neighborhood. It was a great process. It was really great to involve the neighborhood before we come up with any plans. To make sure they're a part of that. And what we've come up with, along with the help of our public works staff, is we're going to have two large bioretention basins on those Sexton lots. And some input from the neighborhood also requests that we include some green space, as well as a space for a community garden, which we intend to do. Also, a lot of feedback from that experience, those four meetings, encouraged us to have owner-occupied single-family housing on Lynn Street. So that's what our intentions here are with these two lots. We do have funds that our Community Development Commission approved for us to start the process of beginning our RFP. So on these two lots, we'll likely have Habitat for Humanity on one of them, Job Point on the other, and then the property that's zoned R2 to the east. We'll have CMCA working on that, and then Lynn Street Cottages. We plan to use a private developer. So what's great about this is we'll have all these lots being developed at a pretty similar time period over the next year here. So really excited about what we have going on here. Feedback from the neighborhood that I got was very good about downzoning it to R1. They thought that was a great way to do this. So if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Randy. Is there any questions for the speaker? I see none, so I appreciate it. Thank you. Are there any additional speakers on this matter? I see none. We'll go ahead and close this public hearing. Commissioners, any discussion on this matter? Mr. Stanton.
This is in my neighborhood. They've made some really good improvements to this, and it's a win-win across the board. So there's nothing else to say. I can go ahead and form a motion.
I see some nods of approval. So, Mr. Stanton, the floor is yours.
As it relates to case 16-184, I move for approval of the proposed rezoning from CP to R1.
Second.
Mr. Stanton, thank you for that motion. Mrs. Russell, thank you for that second. A motion has been made and a second has been put on that motion. Is there any discussion of this motion from the commissioners? I see none. Mrs. Burns, may we have a roll call on this matter, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Stribin?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. That's 9 in the affirmative. The motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. That our recommendation in the planning and zoning will be forwarded to City Council for their consideration. That looks to be the end of our work, our session. So comments of the public. If there's anyone in the public that'd like to come forward, we welcome you. Just please give us your name and address, and the floor is yours.
Good evening. My name is Phil Teeple. I live at 4206 Savoy Drive. And what I wanted to discuss tonight was the uniform development ordinance that's being prepared and proposed. In full disclosure, I am a engineer for the city. I work for Mr. Teddy in the Community Development Department, but I'm here as a private citizen tonight. In the 64 zoning ordinance, they established a definition of a legal lot that's fairly cumbersome, but I think cumbersome for a reason. In particular, single-family and agricultural uses don't have to meet as high of a standard to qualify as a legal lot. So your single-family home, if it was a leftover tract or had a survey or was described by deed a long time ago, you can still build a house, build a garage, do an attachment. The proposed ordinance changes that to make it very simple, where it's basically a platted lot or not. I currently own a property that was described by deed in 1834. That was before the University of Missouri. And if the ordinance passes as is, I cannot build a garage. I cannot build a shed over 200 square feet or do an addition to my structure. So I just wanted to make you guys aware of that. And as you're reviewing the ordinance, if you could consider the potential taking of property rights from making this complex item very simple. I would just also like to quote H.L. Mencken, the famous journalist, for every complex problem, there's a solution that's simple, neat, and wrong. So if you have any questions.
Commissioners, Mr. Stanton.
What's your solution?
My solution would be to retain the language from the 1964 ordinance for A1 and R1 uses. Any higher uses, I would say that the new requiring the platting or the planning process would be more appropriate.
Comments.
Mr. Stanton, you may have to lean forward so she can hear you.
Have you made your comments public, like in as we've gone through this ordinance and as we've revised all these
yes,
developments, so you've made it official in the
I have submitted comments to the planning staff, okay. And I have also, and that's why I'm here tonight, I hear the ordinance is up for a re-release with a lot of changes, so I'm hopeful to look through that and see what has changed. But I think there's also public comment October 20th, which I may not be able to attend, so I wanted to be here tonight to speak in front of you.
Appreciate it. Is there any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Tebow. We do appreciate you coming out on your own personal time. Any additional public comments? I see none. We'll move on to comments of the staff. We're always can count on staff for some comments. Staff?
Sometimes can be more colorful than others.
True. Tonight might be an exception.
I know. Tonight I'm going to be subdued for you since I'm exhausted because I've been trying to complete a code.
We don't mind that.
But we do have your next meeting is scheduled for October 6th. It will start at 7 p.m. We will give you fair warning. The October 20th meeting does start at 6 p.m., so put that into your calendar, your BlackBerry, your Outlook calendar, and just be here at 5:30 on the 20th for your work session, and then a half an hour worth of meal time, and then we go into our public information or our public hearing session at 6 on the 20th.
Mr. Zinner, real quick clarification. For October 6th, there is no work session?
There is a work session.
Okay.
You got a work session.
We got the night off a little bit.
No. I don't give you all a night off unless I get one as well. But October 6th, you do have a work session at 5:30. I need to take one. Is that what you're telling me? So 5:30 is your work session on the 6th. It will be basically a session where we will talk about the October 20th public hearing for the UDO and potentially any comments that we have received up to that point after the release of document in its final public hearing draft state. So be prepared for that. Come with questions that you may have as it relates to process or items that you have identified potentially through your review of the document as well that we may not have addressed quite the way we had thought we were going to through all of our supplemental meetings. And that will be, again, 5:30 on the 6th with your regular meeting starting at 7 p.m. And then the regular meeting agenda is stacked. We do have a couple of subdivisions that we are tentatively scheduling, and this is in light of trying to lighten the hearing load on the October 20th agenda, which we have received a number of applications which are in the queue that we do not believe we will be able to move forward. So the two subdivision items you see here were scheduled for the October 20th meeting, but we believe due to their more simplistic nature, we will be able to move them up one meeting cycle, but we're not confident at this point. We haven't gotten all of our comments back. That is why we are listing them as tentative. The public hearing and subdivision items, however, are a fairly good guarantee that we will have them, and they are dual projects, the Breckenridge project this evening, which we tabled the annexation and our one permanent zoning request, has a corresponding preliminary plat with it, and those two will be handled as a joint staff report with separate votes. And then we have another request that is in similar fashion, the JR2 development, which is a R1 annexation request off of Route PP in the northeast portion of the city, and a subdivision plat to be known as Fox Creek, which basically goes along with that annexation and permanent zoning. So you have a little bit of a pictorial understanding of where we are. The Anthony Addition replat is over in the east, in Ben Stevens, I apologize. And then our Cunningham Place and Mitchell Court is actually over in, I think I have that reversed. I have it reversed. Anthony is in East Campus, and then Cunningham Place and Mitchell is in Ben Stevens. Both of these properties are seeking to be replatted into a single lot. They are both zoned R3, allowing multiple structures to exist on the lots. This is in anticipation of the platting changes that we will be making as it relates to the new UDO, requiring that if you don't have a single lot and you propose to redevelop, you would need to plat. So they are just trying to get ahead of that. At this point, again, these are both zoned R3, square footage to unit count to ensure that we have an adequate allocation of land area will be conducted as part of our review. And these are being processed through our more of our preliminary platting process, where we do have a public information meeting on these next week, given the locations of the two parcels, being in East Campus and Ben Stevens, where we generally have a heightened interest by the neighborhood residents to know what platting action is occurring. At this point, there is no desire that we are aware of by the applicant to do any type of redevelopment of these sites. So the existing structures will remain. They will just remain on a single consolidated parcel of land. And then our applications for Breckenridge. Again, these are the correct maps. We apologize for the error we had when we were tabling it. Same area, 90 acres, just a little bit over 90 acres at the end of Smith. There is no PUD associated with the proposed annexation at this point, which was in the southern portion of the property in the annexation graphic. It is all an R1 annexation request at this point for 140 total lots within the preliminary plat. And then our JR2 development for the annexation is R1 and its corresponding preliminary plat area. They are identical. And these are basically to facilitate a lower density, more environmentally friendly type of development. Originally desired to be a LEED development from a residential development perspective, but could not meet the LEED standard requirements in order to be able to do so. So they're coming in with a standard subdivision that may have a couple of unique aspects associated with it. And Mr. McIntyre will provide the report on that one on the October 6th agenda. Just as Mr. Tipa was here to speak this evening, I didn't notice him when we started our meeting tonight, or I would have provided on his behalf the comments that Mr. Tipa made in order to allow the commission to at least react to them. Staff had been approached as it related to the issue that Mr. Teeble brought up, and we will buy one of our local land surveyors as it related to a similar issue. We will go back. We will look at what we are producing. I believe what Mr. Teeble is suggesting is not something that we could not accommodate, especially with the caveat that anything beyond R1 or R2, so the current is A1, R1, R2, has the exemption that he was referring to. I think that that is possible to accommodate that, and we still generally achieve our objective. The bigger concern that we have always had with the way that our definition is has to deal with redevelopment within our downtown area, which is zone C2 to be MDT, where we have multiple parcels that are parts of pieces of former subdivisions from 1826 when the original City of Columbia's plat was approved. And it just makes it for an extremely complicated process of determining legal lot, development area. And we would like to be able to, in instances, be more contemporized platting. And to do so, to allow us the opportunity to change the definition, would accomplish that. Our three development parcels, for example, in Ben Stevens or East Campus, if, as Mr. Teeple has suggested, would not be exempt but would be required to comply with that definition, I think will also facilitate a greater amount of public comment as it relates to a minor subdivision plat, which would, through the revised UDO, be required to come before the Planning Commission for a hearing and then be presented to City Council. I believe it achieves what we want. So I will confer a little bit more with Mr. Teeble, make sure I understood what his suggestion was, and we can see if we can accommodate that in for the draft that we will be releasing on the 26th. So as we talk today in work session, and for the benefit of the public, we are wrapping up the revisions to the UDO, and it will accommodate or it will combine many of the comments that have been made over the last about 4 months of review. We will have a link available on the city's website to the new UDO. There will be two hard copies available at the public library for the public to review. The public hearing is scheduled for October 20th. That hearing will begin at 6 p.m. It'll be the first item on the agenda. And as we have discussed, the public hearing will not end until we have served all of the customers that have come to speak. We will have a lengthy staff report that will not be 6 hours in length like it was when we presented each of the modules. It'll be half of that. So we will basically provide you an overview of those changes and try to summarize for the latecomers that may be just now hearing about a development code update what is in the document. And in all seriousness, no, it won't be 3 hours. We'll try to get it to about an hour. But there is a lot of material to cover, as you all know. And we do encourage the public to review that document. We encourage you as commissioners to review it. We have left the formatting the way that the formatting is today, has footnotes which represent what Clarion produced as part of its contracted engagement with the City of Columbia. Side margin notes then, as we introduce them through the May information sessions, will be denoted as being made in May. And then we will have any comments, again, in a side margin note that have been made as a result of your supplemental work sessions and the public comment sessions that were captured in the comment and issue spreadsheet noted as being addressed within that side margin note as a 9/16 comment. So people realize that we have maybe made changes and we have identified and responded to issues that were brought up over the last 4 months. We realize, based on the volume of the document, there may be particular items that could be overlooked. I will apologize for that in advance. If you do notice something, we do request that you provide us written observation of that prior to the October 20th meeting, so we are aware and we may be able to produce or be prepared to make revisions at that time. Or respond to if it was actually omitted or if it was an item that we as a commission and a staff had discussed that we chose not to include. So just as an overview to that process, but again, October 26th, the public release of the final public hearing draft will be available for viewing, and the public hearing again is October 20th at 6 p.m. We are done with what we have to offer you this evening. We thank you for your attention tonight and look forward to being able to release the document on Monday of next week.
I've got, and just for clarification, you had mentioned October 26th. You meant September 26th.
Yes.
We understand you're getting a little tired.
I'm getting a little bit tired.
They're blurring together. Mr. Tui, did you have a
comment? Is there anything else scheduled for October 20th?
Yes, there is, unfortunately, and given the fact that we have a published calendar a year in advance, those projects that we can move forward, we will. So what I showed you for the October 6th meeting, we may have a couple more if we can get them there. However, given that the projects that were submitted, other than the two plats that I showed you, were actual plan district plan revisions or plan approvals, I do not believe, based on the way that our review cycle runs, that it'll be possible to move them off of the 20th. Again, in respect for the public's coming out to see us that evening, possibly for the code, we were not going to move any regular business items ahead of the code discussion. And our applicants have been made aware of that, that it'll be potentially a very long evening before we get to their items. We do not have a second meeting in November, so I am happy to do agenda management at this point. The potential that the commission does not act on the 20th for the code does not then make delaying a project to the first meeting in November any better. So just taking care of the items that are in the queue on the date that they were supposed to be scheduled is, in my opinion, probably the best route to go at this point. Unless we obviously identify a major problem, and then if that necessitates at least a single tabling, we may recommend that it be tabled to the first meeting in December, just based on the fact that I do not know what the commission, what the outcome of the October 20th meeting will be. And I do not want to get into the same situation on the first meeting in November to where we still have a backlog. I can't, at this point, unfortunately, I cannot stop people from submitting projects.
Yeah, I understand. I just wanted to make sure that the applicants knew what they're getting into.
They are. They're well aware.
Nicely. Any additional comments from staff?
No, not this evening. Thank you. Other than the fact that I would like to add, actually, I should probably mention that, is as, unless you were going to under the comments of the commission.
Go ahead.
But I'll steal your thunder maybe first, Mr. Chairman. We did hold elections this evening for our executive officers for the Planning and Zoning Commission. You'll notice a little bit of a shift in the lineup on our dais. Commissioner Strotman has been elected to the position of chairman after serving the last several months as our vice chair, but chairing our meetings. Ms. Lowe has been moved to our vice chairman's position from secretary, and then we welcome Ms. Burns to the secretary's role for the 2016-17 term, and hopefully we will be able to provide you all the services that you're accustomed to.
Pay raises for everyone. With that, comments of the commissioners or the commission? Any commissioners' comments?
I would love to adjourn this meeting as soon as possible.
Wow. We
second that one.
Get a general feeling here. Just real quick before we do adjourn that meeting, I'm aware that maybe Mr. Tui and I may not be present at the October 6th meeting. Is there any other one that is there any other commissioners aware of their absence on October 6th for a quorum matter? Everybody else should be good? Okay. Thank you for that. And with that, we have a motion and a second somewhere in there for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Yes, so thumbs up on the adjournment. Thank you. Everyone have a nice evening. See you.